It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
An interesting choice of music to start off this show. It is Grey Cup weekend here in our fair city of Toronto. Dan Riccio with Dan Robson and Dave Zarum on Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm filling in for Ben Ennis this morning. So we got two Dans and a Dave on a good Saturday morning. What's up, boys?
Not too much. Glad to be here.
Doing pretty good. Just call me Robson for the rest of the show.
Okay. Robson, Zarum, and Reach here on Sportsnet Magazine Live. We'll get to a lot of stuff. Obviously, Grey Cup, top of mind here in this city. It's been mostly negative news around the Grey Cup. I'm not sure we'll change that all that much, but maybe there's a surprise around the corner. But stick around. We'll talk about that in the 10 o'clock hour, along with the Toronto Raptors as well, and Toronto FC, who continue their playoff run against Montreal next Wednesday. Now, we'll start the show off with hockey. And the Maple Leafs have really been a bit of a roller coaster ride here early in the season, guys. And it's been interesting because, you know, we get overly excited, or the fan base gets overly excited by a couple of wins. And then not so down when they have a couple of losses, because people are like, well, if they finish bottom five, we still get another high draft pick. So it's still not the end of the world. It's a really weird situation where the Leafs are still in win-win mode no matter what happens.
I think that's great, though. I mean, that's exactly where the fan base should be right now. What they're seeing has been, I think what they should have come into the season expecting. It's kind of nice for once, and for people not to be freaking out in Toronto.
Well, it's like found money, right? Because you have this team that's so young, and when teams are young, that usually equates to losing.
Yeah,
you know, like, you have to learn how to win, and that's where the Leafs probably still are at. But certainly the fact that they're playing near 500 hockey, yeah, at this point, even at this point in the season, I know we're only at the quarter mark, but even at this point, I mean, there's no way. At least for me, like, my expectations were much lower. Like, I knew. I suspected they'd be exciting to watch because of the talent. I suspected that that losses wouldn't hurt, because all you're looking at is the almost like distant future when it comes to this roster. And they're still kind of the infancy stage of putting together the total package for what this team could be in the future. But the fact that they're winning games at the same time, it's just like, it's great. Like you said, it's win-win. You lose, you get that draft position, and also you get to have these guys get the experience. And if you win hockey games, and it's just a good position to be at.
Yeah, and they have those two wins against Nashville and Florida now over a week ago, and they follow that up with three straight losses. But, you know, when you look at their body of work here this season, they've given some pretty good teams a run for their money, and they look like they can skate with pretty much anyone. And that's, I think, if you're a Leaf fan, that's what you should be most excited about, is that these kids really quickly going up against Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, mm-hmm, and really giving those guys a run for their money on any given night.
Right. I mean, the thing that's exciting about them is that they're currently, they have the second most scoring chances in the league right now amongst all teams. I mean, this is a young offensive team that is just going to get better. And I mean, when you talk about this notion of a rebuild, I mean, a lot of it's here. It's just growing.
Right.
They obviously have to add some pieces on the back end. They're obviously going to add pieces here and there, but you're looking at a core that's going to be there for a while, and there's a lot to be excited about, obviously up front with Austin Matthews, but I mean, throughout that lineup, I mean, even guys like Connor Brown, who have been playing great, they're proving they're NHL players, and I mean, that's all you can expect right now, and it's been fun to watch.
At what point does Coach Mike Babcock, like, coach the fun out of them? You know, that's like always the downfall with having a winning type of coach in hockey is that he's going to coach defense into them. And you, I mean, like, I don't know if you could ever coach, like, you're not going to coach the skill out of guys like Marner and Matthews, but right now they're a run and gun team. They're as fast as any in the league.
But I think also, like, a good coach tailors his game plan, tailors his approach to the roster. Right. I mean, there's two ways you can do it, right? And it applies to, like, almost any sport, any team. You can either have the coach with his system and find the players that fit that system, or you can look at what your roster is and find a way to make that work. And I think certainly in the case of the Leafs, you look at what they have, and why would you try to stifle guys like Nylander and Marner? Why would you tell them to play a different style? I mean, it's super exciting for the fans. I mean, it draws people in at a time when you're not selling them on playoffs, although we can talk about that in a bit. That might not be the craziest notion, but you're not selling them on a deep playoff run or being a contender. You're selling them on the future and, like, just watch this thing grow. And so the fact that the on-ice product is fun at the same time, like, I don't know why you would want to change that.
Well, I mean, one of the things about the guy like Matthews and Marner too, though, is they are quite good defensive players. I mean, Marner actually he's so good up front. I mean, he's sort of compared to Patrick Kane in so many ways, but he also he gets back. We're not talking about Phil Kessel here. Like, he plays both ends of the ice.
There's like an incorrect assumption that because he's small and fast, it means he can't play on the other.
Watching him block shots is like, what? Mitch Marner of the London Knights?
It's terrifying to see him do that, but he actually blocked shots with the London Knights too. I mean, people didn't realize that's not a highlight reel kind of play, but he's always been that kind of a gritty player. His idol is Doug Gilmore. I mean, he plays. He's not. You're gonna watch him more and more, I think, especially as he gets, you know, a little bit stronger and a little more confident in the league. Although he's pretty confident in the league, I shouldn't say a little more confident because he's already playing. Like he belongs, but he's that kind of guy that I think it's a positive. When you look at this team, you go, this isn't just an offensive team. This isn't a team. I mean, unfortunately, their defense isn't fantastic, but I think that up front, you've got so much potential and I think fans are seeing that. So everyone's just saying, okay, well, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a good ride.
And you know, you mentioned Matthews too, and obviously one of the huge selling points on him heading into the draft was the fact that you are getting this big physical two-way player, which is like an ideal building block going forward. The defense thing is interesting,
player,
though.
Yeah,
a total franchise player, and that means playing on both ends of the ice. But, you know, you mentioned the defense, and I always wonder about this. So let's say you're the GM of the Leafs, and you're trying to build this future contender. You have all these young pieces. It's all really exciting. You know that where you really need work is on the blue line. Are you being patient and building that through the draft like you have with your forwards, or are you looking at some of the maybe veteran pieces on your team, some of the more tradable assets, and thinking this is a way where I can build my blue line for the future, not for today?
Yeah, that's a tough proposition, and I think that's the toughest question that Maple Leaf brass has to answer right now.
I only ask the toughest questions.
Because, you know, I think you look at the Oilers and the mistakes that they've made over the years, and that was, you know, first off, not getting the right coach in place early on. The Leafs believe that they did that before really they went and tanked as they got Mike Babcock through 8 years, and this is just year two. Then, you know, this year they went out, they got their goalie, and they identified a guy. They said, this is going to be our goalie. Whether or not that works out, still to be seen.
Freddie It'll be fine.
Seems to be playing well now, so after the early season struggles. And, you know, I think the next step that the Oilers didn't do is find a true, like, real good defensemen that they could kind of anchor their team with.
Right. I mean, the Leafs, I mean, arguably have that in Morgan Rielly. He's just not there yet. And the question is he a number one defenseman? Is he a number two defenseman? It's not entirely clear right now. He's a skilled defenseman for sure. Where does he land? But they don't have that guy at that moment because they're growing. He's growing as well.
I mean, I see three guys on this team that are legit defensemen that you want to move forward with, and that's Gardner, that's Rielly, and that's Nikita Zaitsev. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, you're still building the back half of that defensive core.
Right, and there's a couple of pieces that are definitely there for veteran experience that, you know, aren't really a key part of this.
Oh,
you know,
Matt Hunwick's terrible.
And Palak's not. I mean, these guys, and they're not really doing what they're hoping. They're not really being shut down defensemen.
No.
So they know they're going to need changes there. Now, when do they make those changes? I mean, that's the big question here. Is you look at the season right now, do the Leafs try and make some deals and get some assets now, or like you said, I mean, they've been drafting incredibly well. So I think that maybe it's not something you can necessarily fix through a trade.
Yeah, I mean, That is pretty fast. Like, what is your timeline here with this team? I mean, I know that, like, we're in the middle of the season. They're playing really well. But it's so hard to not look big picture with a team like this. Like, Riccio, before we went on the air, you mentioned that...
The P word.
You think they could be a playoff team as soon as this year. But what would, like, realistically, what's your timeline for when you want this all to come together?
Well, I don't think you want to get mired in losing like the Oilers did. Mm-hmm. And also, like, if you... Just the way defensemen develop, and we've talked about Morgan Rielly, as you mentioned, Dan, and how we still don't kind of know exactly what he is. We still feel there's potential that maybe he can be a number one defenseman, but probabilities is he's maybe a two or three type of guy. And where do you get that number one defenseman outside of the top five picks in the draft? But also, on top of that, how long does it take that guy to develop, and does it match up with the other things that you got going on? So it's really hard to see how this all kind of matches up.
Right. I think you want to make sure, like, you've got this young talent that's sort of not, I mean, it's not peaking, but it's rising. It's obviously not peaking. It's just rising and getting much better. And you don't want it to be, as you said, not something like Edmonton, which is sort of just losing and getting frustrated. You want them to be competitive, pushing to that edge. But progress. You want it to be in, I think, 2 to 3 years. I mean, you don't want to be that far out from seeing this team become an actual contender in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if you don't make it this year, right now I look at this team and I look at the landscape of the Eastern Conference, and I'm, you know, given some bad luck losses, this is probably a bubble playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Just given what we've seen from the Islanders, who just look like a complete tire fire right now. Carolina, they're in a rebuild type mode too. Buffalo, they still don't have Jack Eichel. I mean, there's just so many teams that are not great in the Eastern Conference that I think the Leafs are right there in the Columbus, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Detroit, like that kind of area where you could maybe sneak in if you get on a hot run at some point.
And I mean, this is just a thought, but I mean, at that point, it's like, are you hurting yourself? Because maybe now you're holding on to some
I don't think getting into a playoffs is ever a bad thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, I'm just thinking long-term. You look at your team long-term, and if you're doing really well this season, you're like, well, we do not want to disrupt this. We have a chance to make the playoffs, which I understand. Like, it's all about making the playoffs. It's all about being competitive. But if that's happening now, and that's stopping you from, let's say, looking at some of your... a Bozak or like a JVR, dare I say, and saying, like, these are valuable assets that can get us that blue chip defenseman in the right scenario for a trade. But when, because of the way they're playing right now, you're really more hesitant than ever to make that kind of deal where maybe long term that is what's best for the team. And I'm just spitballing here. I mean, you think about that in terms of, you know, with the Raptors, you always hear about like DeMarcus Cousins trade rumors. Yeah. And it's like, well, you are going to disrupt your entire. The balance of your team if you do that because of the assets it's going to take to bring a blue chip guy in here. So you need that blue chip defenseman on the Leafs, but is it worth it going for that guy via trade at least? I don't think it is.
That's the challenge of team management, though. I mean, you want to be a winner, but you also have to look to the future. And if there is a trade to be made that is going to bring in someone that can actually be that blue chip defenseman that makes you a winner next year. I mean, that event or it develops into one quickly. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think they're going to look into making that trade. But at the same time, I mean, they're either going to push for the playoffs and keep winning. I mean, it's not, I don't think it'd have to be mutually exclusive options.
Yeah. And I think you look at a lot of the numbers with this team, possession stats and the analytical data with the Leafs, and you are quite impressed with a lot of it. And the bad thing is, as much as they are creating chances, as you mentioned earlier, Dan, and creating shot attempts and different things like that, they also allow a healthy amount of shots at their own goal. And that's where we've seen the defensive struggles come in as well. But as we mentioned from the top, that's what's making this team so exciting is they play at a higher pace than any other team in the National Hockey League. And that makes for, if you're a hockey fan, must-watch viewing every single night.
Right. And it's the thing, too, that you have to be patient with when you look at a team that that puts up the goals they do and they've got second, third, and fourth, or fifth in rookie scoring right now. I mean, you've got these top scoring players. But you look at that, you also look at the amount of leads they've given up and their inability to shut it down. I think that's just a lot of maturity and understanding how to play the game in the NHL. And that's something that that Babcock for sure is going to develop within them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, getting back to that defenseman conversation, you know, it goes to, can you win a Stanley Cup without one of those guys? You look at the LA Kings, they had Drew Doughty. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks, Duncan Keith.
Right.
The Bruins with Zdeno Chara in his heyday. Every Stanley Cup winner has that true number one defenseman. Even San Jose, when they got there last year, Brent Burns carried them all the way through, and he just locked up for an 8-year contract. You can't, when you get one of those guys, you can't let them go. And that's the difficulty. And when you see a guy like Jacob Trouba come on the market, possibly because he's asking to be traded, you have to ask yourself, is this the time to do it? And is this the guy that we want to make that trade for?
And again, though, that the problem with that is it's not clear what Jacob Trouba is either.
Right. He's in that Morgan Riley type conversation. Yeah,
and he could be that guy. And I mean, I think I would be surprised if they haven't kicked the tires on that and said, okay, well, what's going on here? But, you know, you just, it's hard to
tell. But
what does
Winnipeg want in return? They want another defenseman, right?
Yeah. And that's the question. What are you willing to give up? And everybody wants, I mean, right now, defensemen are gold. Like that's the marquee thing right now.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, you know, there's just so much forward talent on this team. You look at through the prospect ranks and the Marlies right now, they're first in the AHL and they just got guys that can score out of their ears. So they even with all the talent at the NHL level, they have B+ and B prospects still in the A and even across junior hockey. So, and even in the KHL, like everywhere you look, Leafs have forward prospects scoring.
So would you give up, I mean, it depends on who's looking for forward prospects, but would you give up some of that depth for something that translates to strong defensive core now?
Oh yeah.
I think you look at it, it all comes down to control and things like that and sure. Who's available and whatever. We can always get in those conversations. But I think you want to make that trade not as soon as possible, but you don't want to wait on making that trade. And if you are at or near a playoff spot this season around trade deadline and one of those guys is becoming available, you have to seriously look at trading some of your forward prospect depth to get one of those guys. I don't know if you want to trade anything off the current roster. You might have to. You might have to part ways with a Nylander or something like that, even though you don't want to. But I'd rather, you know, you go with the Brandon Leipzig or a Kasperi Kapanen, who may never have their value as high as they do now while they're scoring for fun in the AHL.
Right, yeah, and it's promising. And you almost forget about those guys too, though. I mean, guys that, you know, have had a sort of taste of the NHL, and they're just down there, kind of ready to come up and be part of that next team. So, yeah, I mean, it's a question. I mean, you're gonna have to give up something good to get something back, and yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely not something that should be out of the question.
Yeah, and I think what you hear from Mike Babcock these days is you know, he's about winning each and every game. You hear that when he's talking at practice. You hear that when he's talking after games. He wants to win night in and night out. And what's he talking about? You know, we're young, yeah, but that's not an excuse for giving up as many leads as we have. And right now the Leafs lead the league in overtime losses when leading after two periods. That's not necessarily a stat you want to be leading with.
Also not the most surprising stat, right?
Right, given how young they are.
Yeah.
But the one thing that really cheeses me off about this Leaf team is the Matt Hunwicks and the Roman Polaks and the Ben Smiths of the world. Because it's like, okay, yeah, they're fourth line, third pairing guys, but at the same time, like, they're eating up 10 minutes, and that's 10 minutes that you're conceding the fact that you are worse than the other team on the ice. So no matter how it adds up, you know, I can't see Frankie Corrado, Peter Holland, those guys being worse than the Ben Smiths and the Matt Hunwicks of the world.
Yeah, I don't know. So you want to see them? You want to see them in the line? You want to see?
I do. Yeah? I mean, I know Frankie Corrado maybe isn't the greatest defenseman in the world, and he's the most talked about eighth defenseman in National Hockey League history. But you know, I just look at the numbers and how poor a Matt Hunwick is on the ice in terms of, you know, how the Leafs just never have the puck when he is on the ice, and it's just incredibly frustrating. And you wonder when Mike Babcock is making his lineup every night, if he truly does want to win each and every night, why is he making those lineup decisions? But that's my soapbox.
Very nicely done.
Let's get to some of the other National Hockey League teams. We'll end the Leaf conversation on that. Dan Riccio with Dan Robson and Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Magazine Live. So looking at the other Eastern Conference Canadian teams, and the Montreal Canadiens are who we thought they were, I think. Maybe they're even better than who we thought they were, but at 15-4-2 through the quarter mark of the season, they are as good as they were with Carey Price before he got injured last year. And maybe that shouldn't be that big of a surprise. Is there a more valuable player in the NHL right now?
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, he's the most valuable player in the league. And the best goalie in the league is often, I would argue, the most valuable player in the league. Without him, they just can't do what they do. And he's the best goalie in the league. And I think it's just evident. It's more evidence than anything else that this is exactly what, if you can get a guy like Carey Price, obviously you're going to be better.
I mean, we've seen the Penguins, survive for periods of time without Sidney Crosby, not to the level that they are when he's in the lineup, but they can survive. The Tampa Bay Lightning, they're fine without Steven Stamkos. Who cares when he gets hurt? It's going to happen every year, and it doesn't matter for them. But Carey Price, he gets hurt, and the Canadiens are a bottom five team in the NHL. It's crazy.
Yeah, and this is like last year's nightmare. I mean, I think just underscores that so well. It's just just this horrible reality of when you lose that player. You can't even make the playoffs. I mean, and now they're a contender again. They're looking great. I mean, I think Shea Weber's fitting in really nicely, and it's sort of been, everyone obviously was very upset about, not everyone, but many people were upset about the PK trade. But they're clicking now, and I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it does show you like Robson being a former goalie. I feel like anything you say about goalies is extremely biased. But I happen to agree. Like that goalie position is so crucial, and it is. Probably like the lone position in hockey that can absolutely just carry a team.
Is there a more important position in sport?
There's not.
I was just gonna say like, as I was thinking about that, I was like, maybe starting quarterback in football in terms of one player having such a all around impact on his team, by virtue of the fact that the ball's in their hands, they're making all the decisions.
But even last year, I mean, Peyton Manning with the Broncos, like
he was like a placeholder. Yeah.
Just like
excellent point.
Manage games, yeah.
But yeah, with a goalie, I mean, it's all on you. And if you can be that kind of consistent wall, that's going to either keep you in games or just flat out win you games always, no matter what's in front of you.
And people say it's similar to pitchers. Yes,
but pitchers is different because
pitchers
it's once every five days, right?
Exactly.
So those other 4 days, you don't know what's happening.
I mean, I think it's
a goalie, a goalie who can, especially one who can play consistently, and that's why the health thing with Price is such a
If he does stay healthy, they're an Eastern Conference contender.
I think, let's hope he stays healthy. I mean, it's also, as someone who loves goaltending, it's really fun to watch him play. Not that he's the most acrobatic goaltender but he's the calmest, coolest goalie I've seen play the game, and it's just incredible to watch.
And he's also stolen two games from the Leafs this year. By the way, both in Montreal. But the other interesting thing about the Montreal Canadiens. Is one of their offseason acquisitions. No, not Shea Weber, but Alex Radulov. Nobody kind of knew what this guy was going to be. Yeah. And through talking to different Montreal guys on this station and when I was there earlier in the week for the TFC Montreal match, the number one thing you hear about the Montreal Canadiens now is their MVP, besides Carey Price, is Alex Radulov. And I don't think anybody could have expected that going into the season.
No, I was sort of like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was everybody's reaction when they heard about Radulov. And you're thinking, are we doing that
again?
Yeah,
we're going. No risk, 1 year, okay. I guess we'll see what happens. But this could go horribly wrong, given the stories that we heard out of Nashville.
And he's a giant. He's an enigma in that sense. I mean, maybe not even an enigma. He was something we thought we'd figured out. But he's clearly... he's clearly been incredibly valuable to this team. So, I mean, good on them for taking that chance. A limited risk, but it was obviously not a bad one.
It shows you too, like talent in other leagues. You know, the fact that you can't, like, not being in the NHL doesn't equate to you being terrible or not having an opportunity to develop. It is wild to see. I mean, he's like pretty much point per game right now.
Yeah,
and you have to go back to like 2007, 2008. I may or may not be looking this up right now.
Yeah.
When he got 58 points in 81 games, and that was like, that seemed like probably close to his ceiling even then. And to think now that he could be not a point per game guy, but pretty close, it's like winning the lottery. I think you do need to give credit to guys like Galchenyuk, who's just like really solid for them. But it's just a total surprise. No one would have ever seen this coming. And you combine that with that goaltending, some other talent. I know they have guys in the, in the minors who are looking really promising,
right?
Who you might see this as early as this season, and I'd be really worried about Montreal if I'm in the East looking around.
And the problem with him before too was his I mean, his attitude and his perception with the team and like how he sort of fit into it. It wasn't just sort of on the ice. It was who, like, what is this guy's character like? And I mean, I
think it was overblown, like, just because of, you know, we didn't, being here and not close to Nashville, being in an Eastern Conference city, you hear the stories, you hear the rumblings, but certainly maybe it wasn't the whole story.
Sure.
Or maybe he's just matured. I know he's recently had a child, and that seems to be like an epiphany for a lot of these guys, where their point of maturing in life.
As it should be.
As it should be, now that you're a Papa Radulov rather than just Radulov going crazy in the Music City. But he's a dominant player on the ice.
Right.
And you watch him, you notice when he's on the ice, you see him driving play. And it's incredible that now you think of the Habs and guys like Gallagher and Desharnais and Thomas Plekanec, they're not necessarily the guys that have to score. They're not even being great right now because they're considered the secondary scoring now.
Right, and I think, I mean, your earlier point about not really knowing the full story is key. I mean, we never really do know the full story, and I think the Habs probably did their homework, obviously met with him, obviously got a sense of where his head is and what he's thinking. And I mean, I think that you get a kind of a bargain deal on something like that when you're willing to take a chance. And and like I said, it's definitely paid off.
And he's already asking for multi-year deal extension. So
as he should,
if he keeps it up.
Yeah. If he keeps it up, I mean, I'm sure he's listening to sports radio in Montreal, and everybody's just like, "Oh, he's amazing, Alex Radulov."
But I mean, also, like, a part of it is like, yeah, we don't know all the information, but when, like, it's almost maybe oversimplification of it. But like, as you grow older, you mature, and you know what I mean. You figure out what you need to do to make it work in kind of all aspects of your life, and that could be a big part of what we're seeing now.
That's beautiful. Radulov.
rapid fire through some of the other Canadian teams as we are running out of time here. The Ottawa Senators, they're off to a decent start, but I look at some of these numbers and they have a negative goal differential. They're not scoring a whole lot of goals. Right. They stink on the power play. I mean, it just looks like a team that's maybe started off this season with a little bit of luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was hopeful for them at the start because of I think they underperformed last season. I think they look pretty good under Guy Boucher, and there's a lot of momentum there. But I mean, to your points, like, you're not really sure when the train goes off the rails, and if it does. I think they're third in the Atlantic right now. It's something positive that's happening, but obviously there's some situations that they're going to need to shore up in the next little while.
And that Eastern Conference is really, really muddy right now with the way that it's shaken out. I mean, Ottawa's in there, and they have a pretty they got a 3-point lead on Boston for that third spot in the Atlantic. But it gets pretty muddy after that. Over in the West, the Oilers catching everybody's eye, and they lose last night in a shootout, but they're atop the Pacific Division. Connor McDavid is leading the league in scoring. It's kind of exactly how you would have wanted to script it if you're Oilers brass, is how it's going right now.
Right, and it just hasn't really gone that way in the past, so good for them. they tried to script it that way many times.
Yeah.
10th time's a charm or whatever. It worked out. It's working out. And then, McDavid is, I'd say the second best player in the league, and will very soon be the best player in the league, and that's exactly what you get in Edmonton. But also, they've created a better team around him. I mean, obviously trading Taylor Hall was a difficult move, but this is Connor's team. This is sort of the McDavid era, and they've worked to make the defense a little bit better. They brought in some strength beside him in Lucic, and I think it's definitely paying off. They are one of the most fun teams to watch right now.
And I think what they're doing is completely sustainable too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just like a extended hot streak. Like, I fully expect them to be right there at the top of the standings when we're sitting here having this conversation towards the end of the season, post All-Star break.
Good for Edmonton fans. They deserve it.
Oh, man. I mean, they've been through some, their best parties have been whenever they win the number one overall pick. Much like it has been in Toronto recently when the Leafs won the lottery earlier this year. But I mean, you just look at their defense core, and all of a sudden, Klefbom looks pretty decent. Adam Larson's a good player. Mm-hmm. Yep. Chris Russell fits in on a second pairing. Andre Sequeira. And you have Darnell Nurse, who's kind of just figuring himself out as a third pairing D-man. And that's probably the best situation for a young defenseman, right?
Absolutely. It really is. Like, going back to that, to what we were talking about, the Leafs, it is kind of like a blueprint of what you would like the composition of the Leafs roster to look like,
Well, do you see them making like a, you know, you're talking about earlier about the trade, not to go back to the Leafs, but, you know, bringing in Larson. I mean, that was a trade that shocked everybody. And, and probably value-wise, in terms of looking at what Taylor Hall is as a player, wasn't there, except that the value in a defenseman is so high that they sort of said, this is the market right now.
Yeah, they had a huge need to fill. And it was probably, like you said, the value just player for player, not equal, but in terms of what it provided for your team, obviously worth it. And yeah, I think those are the kind of deals that the Leafs need to take a hard look at when they talk about what this team's going to look like next year and beyond.
Yeah, and that just, it just goes to show again how important defensemen are in this league. Calgary Flames starting to figure stuff out. They've won 5 of 7, and Chad Johnson has started 6 of their 7 games, so they're getting some goaltending. And it goes back to that Montreal Canadiens thing. If you get the goaltending, maybe you have a chance in this.
Yeah, league. And I liked Brian Elliott as a goalie, and I was sort of, you know, I was hopeful for him there. But great, I mean, good for, I mean, also Chad Johnson's a whole, and you have to go with the guy who's going to win games, and good for him.
35 saves last night for Chad Johnson. Flames getting a low-scoring win once again. The Vancouver Canucks, less talked about them, the better. And
and a tire fire.
They pretty much are. And the Winnipeg Jets, Jacob Trouba signs, and 2 wins and 6 losses since he's come back. And I think it's more to do with the scoring falling off a cliff right now, because, I don't know, maybe teams are starting to game plan for Patrick Laine after his hot start to the season.
Laine is cooled down. I mean, he's still doing really well in terms of rookie scoring. I'm pretty sure he's still at the top of the list. But that's a lot of that is boosted from his hot start. And the thing with them, I think it's they've scored 1 goal total in each of their last 4 games.
Right. Yeah, and that's a four-game. It's a four-game slump.
Like, yeah, I'm ready to draw major conclusions based on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been impressed with what Winnipeg's been putting together. And obviously, not in the last little.
There's a ton of talent there, man.
Yeah, they've got something really excited. They've got a lot of exciting future.
Yeah, and I just think it's one of those things. It was going to happen eventually with the way that Laine was scoring. You know, shooting percentage is not going to be able to sustain itself at 30%. So it was going to come down. You figured teams are going to start game planning.
But we just watched Austin Matthews go on this massive slump. Right. Are we worried about Austin Matthews? Should we be? Absolutely not.
No. You shouldn't worry. Mark Scheifele's still 3rd in the league in scoring. Yeah. Just a mini slump for the Jets. I think they're a player in that central division over there in the Western Conference, though. They need to stop this losing streak pretty quickly.
Now all we need is for them to change their logo and their jerseys.
Yeah, to the old style. That would be perfect. Dan Riccio with Dan Robson and Dave Zarum. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live. There is your quarter poll report on the NHL's Canadian teams. When we return, Blue Jays offseason's been pretty quiet. But will it remain quiet? And who should the Blue Jays be targeting? That's coming up next. Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
A taste of what's on Sportsnet.ca right now. Here's Dave Zarum.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it.
For nearly 30 years, The Simpsons has brought the world's most famous family into the homes of billions across the globe. Along the way, it's established a new standard for celebrity cameos.
While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile, we're talking so.
The show's exhaustive and wide-ranging list of notable guest stars is simply without rival. And nowhere is that more evident than in the impressive collection of appearances from the world of sports. I asked 4 longtime Simpsons producers, including the legendary Al Jean, to curate and share a list of their favorite athlete cameos in the show's history. Their choices ran the gamut from the obvious, like Daryl Strawberry in the episode Homer at the Bat.
You're Daryl Strawberry.
Yes.
Well, are you better than me?
Well, I never met you, but yes.
To the near forgotten, like 70s track star Edwin Moses, along with a long list of iconic Hall of Famers.
And now I'd like to introduce the new members of our Happy Power Plant family. Our new security guard, Roger Clemens.
Hello.
Our new janitor, Wade Boggs.
How you doing?
Our new lunchroom cashier, Ken Griffey Jr.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Our new, we'll make up jobs for these fellas later.
fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine.
Dan Racho, Sportsnet Magazine, live here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Dan Robson and Dave Zarum. This song will now forever remind me of Stranger Things. Did you guys watch Stranger Things?
I have not dove into Stranger Things yet.
Incredible.
This is just... All the music thus far has just reminded me of like my grade 7 mix CDs. Pour Some Sugar on Me and Should I Stay or Should I Go?
You would love that show, Dave.
Stranger
yeah.
Things?
Yeah, you'd absolutely love
See,
it.
I've never been a big sci-fi guy. Like yeah, I can't
it's about
get
the
into
80s, man. It's all about the 80s.
Well, I do love the 80s. I love 80s movies and some of the
It
music.
Has a strong 80s feels to it.
Well, yeah. I like
Winona Ryder really feeds into that.
I love the nostalgia, but like I've never like the fantasy world stuff like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, sci-fi, like I can never, I know it's just,
but it's more of a
I'm
tribute.
Too removed from it. I don't know.
It's more of a tribute to a genre than it is an actual sci-fi thing. Yeah. We can talk about sports, but that's what you should definitely watch the show.
I'd like to talk about this for a little bit longer.
Stranger Things, check it out.
Stranger Things is definitely like I've watched it twice. Like I watched it once on my own, and then the better half was like, "Why didn't you watch it with me?" So I watched
There's
it.
There's too
with
much to watch. Like, I have to get through the new Gilmore Girls before I get to Stranger Things.
Fair enough.
That is recently out, I believe. Not that they're paying for advertising.
What's going to happen to Lorelai and the other one?
So let's get to sporting things rather than Gilmore Girls. Dan Riccio, Dave Zarum and Dan Robson on Sportsnet Magazine Live. We only have like a hot minute left here. So let's talk about the Blue Jays. Really, there's not a whole lot to talk about. They are doing a whole lot. And really the big story around baseball right now is when is this collective bargaining agreement going to get done? And that is, December 1st is the deadline day. So I'm assuming we will hear something by then. But it seems like maybe the Blue Jays, along with a lot of other teams, are slow playing things until then. Right. But... this is a team that has a lot of holes to fill. So maybe their best action would be to act while everybody else is kind of staying quiet right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think still their focus is, there's Edwin out there and there's still that outlying hope. So I think that maybe that has a lot to do with it as well. I mean, you can take a shot at other guys as they already have, but I mean, Edwin's a target, but he's a target for everybody, so it's that's difficult.
Yeah, and I think once the collective bargaining agreement gets settled, then we'll really see Edwin's market pick up. And a lot of these other guys, you know, we've heard a lot through the course of the week from John Morosi, one of our baseball insiders and others. Dexter Fowler seems to be a perfect fit for the Blue Jays, and they have two outfield spots that they need to fit around Kevin Pillar. So, yeah, Dexter Fowler and somebody else would be a great fit for this Blue Jay team.
Yeah, I mean, if you can pick up Fowler for, $15 million a year or something like that over 4 or 5 years, I mean, he's probably looking at that. You've got a World Series champion now. You've got a guy who's he can switch hits, so he can hit lefties. They need a left-handed bat. I mean, he kind of checks all the boxes of what they need.
Right, and I think the question will come down to is, do you trade or do you go the free agent route? Because this regime of Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro made it pretty clear from the moment they got in here, we need to rebuild our farm. And it was destroyed by Alex Anthopoulos for good reason. I mean, the trades worked out and the playoff runs have been a lot of fun. But you can't really, it's hard to continue building a team without those prospect pieces.
Even if you're building those prospect pieces, to trade them again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just only good things can happen with having... Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, I think that the thing is, I don't know if they're looking to make a trade. I don't know if it's coming out of the farm. They don't have those pieces necessarily yet. I think right now, the reality is it might be coming in where they have strength, which is on the roster. So, I mean, if they were to try and make a move, it would be something that would be headline making for sure. It would be like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, and I think this Blue Jays offseason could use something like that because Right now, aside from Kendrys Morales, it's just been a bit of bad news. Earlier this week, we saw Brett Cecil sign with the St. Louis Cardinals, got a ridiculous deal at 4 years and over $30 million. I mean, nobody saw that. Good for him, yeah, but just goes to show you how much more relievers are being valued. So what market are the Jays going to be in if they have to pay that much for a new lefty reliever?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And also, I think they face a tough decision in the sense of, are you going to try to just like replace pieces that are leaving or might be leaving, or are you going to try to kind of, like we were talking about before with the Leafs, like look at what your roster is like, and are you going to go in a new direction in terms of the style you play? Like if you lose Edwin and Jose, are you thinking we need to replace all those home runs because that's how we play baseball? Or are you thinking maybe we can replace him with guys like Fowler or go a different route, rely on our pitching even more than ever and kind of change the way you win games?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way you replace Bautista and Edwin in the home run department is with like Bautista and Edwin. So, I mean, it's not...
Right, fair enough. Maybe not the greatest example.
No, but it's a fine example. I think the option, the reality is they have to change. I mean, there's, and in a good way. I mean...
No, they have to get speedier. They have to get more on base. They have to have better defense in the outfield.
And a guy like Dexter Fowler is a great leadoff hitter. I mean, they haven't really had that. I mean, you had Bautista in stretches last year. It's one of those holes that now you've got a guy that's consistent. I mean, you don't necessarily need to win by home runs. And I think that's
clearer now than ever.
Yeah.
And I also think you look at the roster right now, and the only guy that gets on base at a really nice clip is Josh Donaldson.
Yeah. Right.
Outside of that, not a whole lot of great on-base skills with this Blue Jay team. So the offseason is it's going to be interesting. It's continuing, and the winter meetings are just around the corner as well. And again, the collective bargaining agreement, a big part of this offseason. The deadline is December 1st before a decision on a lockout.
Oh, boy.
That's fun. And there's already been reports, I think it was Ken Rosenthal, a lockout is
very possible
in the cards.
Yeah.
Or potentially in the cards.
So very scary times for baseball, who's had labor peace for quite some time. Dan Riccio, Dan Robson, and Dave Zarum. Sportsnet Magazine Live continues. Raptors winners last night. But it was an interesting road trip, and some questions arose during that road trip, I do believe. We'll get Dave and Dan's take on that next on Sportsnet Magazine Live across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, it's 11:02. Dan Riccio with Dan Robson and Dave Zarum. Two Dans and a Dave. Sorry, I screwed up my show name.
This is the makings of a sitcom right here.
Yeah. Two Dans, a Dave, and a pizza place.
Can I just do a quick mixed CD update for my grade 7 years? This probably would not have made the cut.
No, it didn't sound like it.
Gucci Mane, I'm told. It's not 90s rap, so it wouldn't have made it.
No.
Or Dr. Dre, Chronic 2001.
Which is just the greatest album of all time. More one of them, I would say.
Yeah, it's up there, top 10.
It's definitely up there. So we talked hockey last hour. We talked a little bit of Blue Jays. Let's get into the Raptors now, as they were winners last night, guys. And, this road trip, this 5-game roadie, it ends up being pretty good. I mean, you go out on the West Coast and you travel like 9,000 kilometers through the course of this road trip, and you end up 3-2 over the course of it. So you're pretty happy with the way it turns out in the end. But the way it started seemed to get all the headlines because you had that crazy loss in Sacramento, and then you lose on the back-to-back to the Clippers, and you follow it up with a dominant win over the Rockets and then another good win at the Milwaukee Bucks. But I just think, you come away from this, and I guess the Raptors, kind of like any team, they go as DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry go, and more so the way DeMar goes. It seems more than ever, Dave, that this team is really relying on DeMar's scoring.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the entire offense is basically working around him. As I would argue it should be. I mean, right. First of all, the strides he's made this year, I mean, it goes without saying. We've been talking about it since the season started. He's slightly cooled down a bit, but, I mean, you even saw last night against Milwaukee how valuable it is to have a guy like him who is capable of like, his shot-making ability this year is pretty mind-blowing. He's still taking the same shots that we criticized him for in the past, yet maybe it's his headspace, maybe it's work that he's put in the offseason, but now they're falling. I mean, he's shooting at a good clip. He's had a couple of blips recently. He had that 12-point game the other night. But for the most part, he's being every bit like the go-to scorer that I think the Raptors brass kind of dreamed he might be, but you never really knew. And he is that guy for you. He's that rock, that kind of reliable go-to player. And you know, you mentioned it's as DeMar goes, but it's also as DeMar and Kyle goes. Right. And lately, Lowry has just been playing unreal as well. And when you get both those guys clicking like that, it's a hard team to beat. As much as there are faults in the way they're playing, with both those guys on your roster, I mean, again, last night, that final minute, it was Lowry's clutch shot making and DeRozan's clutch shot making, and that's why they won the game. And that's a formula. That's going to be their formula winning.
It's an important point. But my question, actually, I was curious: who do you think the most important player on this team is? I mean, is it Kyle or is it DeMar?
I do think ultimately, before the season, I would have quickly answered Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, obviously point guard's crucial position. We're talking like a quarterback, like a goalie. I mean, he's the guy who is controlling what's happening around him more than anybody else. But that being said, I really do think right now it is DeRozan. He's the guy who other teams are game planning against. And depending on how teams defend him is dictating how the Raptors play. So it's basically all starting with DeRozan and going from there. And I think that's okay. You know, I think it's good to have a kind of clear number one scoring option and your point guard being more of a facilitator. Although with Lowry, obviously he can score.
Yeah.
But it's a good mix. I mean, you're not asking your point guard to be everything. You're asking him to be a point guard and like a floor general. And you have this weapon in DeRozan who can handle so much of the offense. So to answer your question, DeRozan.
Without Lowry, though, can DeRozan do what he's pulled off this year so far?
Yes. I really think so. Like obviously, it helps having other threats like Lowry, like JV. JV has been really good this season so far. He's commanding a lot of attention down low, and it changes the way. It also changes the way teams are game planning against the Raptors. But I just think it all starts and ends with DeRozan right now. He's really taken it upon himself to make this his team in a way that I suspected could happen, but I didn't think would quite happen to this extent. And it's great to see. And also, when you look long-term, DeRozan's here locked up for a long time.
Yeah.
DeRozan's going to be the face of this team for a long time. Kyle Lowry, Raptors fans would hope, is going to be here for a long time, but he's also most likely in the last year of his contract.
I was just curious about DeRozan, because I know, I mean, aside from the SIs, you know, insulting him earlier this year with their, like, number 46, like, ranking, he's never really gotten the respect around the league. Is it because, like, I don't know if he's ever, well, he was an all-star, but do you think he's gotten the respect
vintage.
He deserves?
He's like, well, he's not a modern NBA star.
That is what I like about him. What I like about DeRozan the most is, it might sound, you know, cliched and tired, but it really is like the work ethic. I mean, like his year-to-year improvement, you can see tangible parts of his game that has gotten better every year and continues to do so. But aside from that, what I like best about him is the fact that he's not conforming, or it doesn't feel the need. Maybe he doesn't even have the choice, but he doesn't feel the need to conform to what the modern day shooting guard has to be. He really is unique in that regard. I mean, he doesn't shoot threes. His like high post turnaround jumper, that post up game he has, is pretty unique. That his heavy reliance and like embracing of that mid range game, factoring like in conjunction with his ability to get to the basket, it is kind of different. He is his own kind of player, and I really, really, really like that about him.
I don't know if not shooting threes is a virtue, though. I mean, I think it's something that I know it's not in the mode of what he's doing, and that can be.
But part of, yes, you're right. Like, it would be just an added bonus. He'd be that much better if that was a part of his game. Yes. Like, think of like Tracy McGrady, who could do a lot of the stuff DeRozan's doing, but could also like consistently hit it from deep. So that's really great. But part of the reason why I think DeRozan's playing so well right now and is so confident is because he said, you know, I'm just going to focus on what I do well, and I'm not going to dwell on the things that I don't do well. And I get what you're saying, Robson, because like in that statement is like, I'm not going to work on my threes. That's like
I don't think he's said that, though.
No, he's not. But that's like the assumption that comes with that kind of mindset.
Right.
But the result is also that you just get to focus on what you do really well. And what he does well is quite literally unguardable but yeah. for other shooting guards in the NBA.
Sure.
You know, he's an unguardable player offensively now and doing it in a very atypical way.
Yeah, and like going back to the original point, in wins this year, DeMar is hitting basically 54% from the field.
Crazy.
In losses, he's under 40%. So, I mean, and that's to be expected.
Yeah.
It is a wide differential there for DeMar DeRozan.
It is unprecedented for a guy to be shooting like that, to be taking this many shots, where he's taking them, the type of shots he's taking, and to be hitting at that rate.
Exactly, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It is quite unbelievable.
And probably unsustainable.
No.
Throw that out there, too.
And you've seen his, over the last, I don't know, 10 days or so, you've seen his efficiency kind of come down a little bit. Last 10 games, he's hitting around 46%, whereas those first 10 games of the season, ridiculous. He was like, what, 54, 55? Yeah. It was just out of this world good. So it's been fun. I just think, you know, like this, there's got to be a point where DeMar hits his peak. You know, I've asked it, it's seemingly every year, like, okay, he keeps getting better. And then now he's 27. So is this his peak? Is the next step of his game is finding that three-pointer, at least to shoot it maybe 30%? Is that where he eventually finds his peak?
Well, I mean, as long as there's demonstrable places where he can improve, I mean, I think that has got to be, I think that's absolutely, he can get better. And he's playing incredibly, but you can look at it and go, yeah, but, you know, is he capable of doing not necessarily everything, but doing more things better? And absolutely. And at 27, I don't think you necessarily have reached your peak. He's got a couple, 3 more years, I think, to keep going.
Which is a scary notion. I mean, I think, in terms of his impact on any given game, he's entering his prime, and I think he is near that peak in terms of, like I said, impact on the overall game. But I want to go back to something you mentioned, Robson, and I just realized I totally glossed over. We all totally glossed over is why he doesn't get the quote unquote respect that he perhaps deserves. Part of it is because he hasn't been playing at this level. He has been an all-star, so he's gotten respect from around the league. Being on Team USA means that people within those basketball circles understand what he brings to the table.
Right.
But I think a lot of that is like, I don't mean to go all Canadian on everybody, but part of it is by virtue of the fact that he's playing in Toronto, and it wasn't 100%. Until very recently that the Raptors were on any sort of radar in the States. So we were seeing his year-to-year growth, but we were the only ones seeing it, at least in terms of like an NBA-wide fan media kind of perspective.
His opponents have seen it, though. I mean, that's part of it.
You can talk to other players, and they know perfectly well how good DeRozan has been and could be.
Yeah.
But like that SI list, for example, things like that. People just aren't seeing him game to game.
Well,
and what they see is
a shot at Toronto, really.
It is. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, I agree with Dave in that, because I remember when Roy Halladay was a pitcher for the Blue Jays.
And
back then, I used to work for a sports memorabilia company here in this city.
Cool.
And Roy Halladay was one of our exclusive athletes. So he'd come in, he'd sign balls, he'd sign stuff, and, you know, everything was reasonably priced. And then when he went to the Phillies, you know, the balls all of a sudden were double the price because there's a bigger market there, and it's more Americans have eyeballs on him, and he's winning Cy Youngs with the Phillies rather than the Blue Jays. It's just there's more eyeballs.
You know,
that's really the only real explanation.
I used to write about this with reference to Chris Bosh when Chris Bosh was at the height of his powers with the Raptors. The notion of like the great Canadian shield, not the like massive bedrock or whatever it is. I'm no geologist, but just the notion of like being up here does kind of limit you in terms of national exposure. I think that's changing for the Raptors, certainly, like as you go into the conference finals and those deep playoff runs, that changes things very quickly, like to the point that's already changed. Averaging like 30 points and being a top three scorer in the NBA changes that as well.
And but the Raptors do get their odd, you know, Thursday night or whatever, Wednesday night game on ESPN.
The last one they got it was against the Warriors on a back-to-back after playing Cleveland.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the best
best spot for them, yeah.
Yeah. But you're right, there is more exposure there. But yeah, I always thought about with Chris Bosh, who was, I thought, like the best or second best power forward in basketball for a while there on the Raptors. And within the NBA, people understood that, but he was never like a star until he went to Miami, it feels like. And I hope that's changing. Maybe I'm just like stuck in an old mindset and should evolve, but I just think that that's a part of it when we talk about respect for DeRozan and the Raptors in general.
Dan Riccio, Dan Robson, and Dave Zarem on Sportsnet Magazine Live talking Raptors, who were winners over the Milwaukee Bucks last night, 105-99. They'll head home, play the Philadelphia 76ers on Monday, a game you can hear on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Damari Carroll, I think he was one of the bigger talking points this week for the Raptors because he's kind of been a bit of an enigma. I don't want to say he was he's been a bust so far as a free agent signing by this Raptor team, but he came over to much fanfare saying this guy's going to help our defense and he's going to help our three-point shooting, and he just hasn't been healthy enough to really do that on a consistent basis for the Raptors.
That's the key there,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we've barely seen, if ever, seen a full-strength Carroll. We don't really know what he can contribute. I think what we're seeing in the past few games is certainly like what everyone was hoping for, and you might even call it like a best-case scenario, which is to say he's impacting the game on both ends of the floor, timely plays, bringing that kind of energy, bringing that attitude, those corner threes that they need someone like him to hit. But yeah, we haven't seen a lot of it. I just think it's because he hasn't been healthy. I mean, he says it all the time. He didn't play basketball this summer because he was coming back from his injury stuff from last year. And he came into training camp not at 100%. He still has to be rested on days because he's not 100%. So yeah, it's hard. It's just really hard to evaluate exactly the impact he could have consistently.
The problem, though, is, and I mean, the word bust is obviously quite harsh, but the reality is he's an injured player who we don't know if he will be 100% healthy and what's going to happen down the road. Yeah. So it's tough when you look at a team that, you know, you want the Raptors have obviously, you know, their goal is Eastern Conference Finals again and to get through that giant in Cleveland or whoever they face. But I mean, it's you need players like Carroll, that those pieces are key to get to the final. And that's the problem, is like, what is he going to be? Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily his skill. It's what's he able to do?
I mean, that's why I think we saw elements of it in the playoffs last year. He didn't like take over games, but that's not really who he is anyways.
Right.
But I think that's why, you know, at the beginning of the season when he was saying, you know, I'm not 100% yet, I was really adamant that I would just rest him, just sit him for a while, because you really do need him in the playoffs healthy. And I know that means you got to slow down a bit, you got to work him back into the offense, whatever, like we saw last year. But really, like, you're right, Dan, like, playoffs is when you're going to need this guy to consistently be able to give you 30 minutes a night, let's say. The other thing is, though, like, so if he is hurt, that means who, or if he's not 100%, he can't play every night, can't be as consistent as we hope, who's the next guy? You need that guy behind him to step up. And that's why I've been so pleased with what we've seen from Terrence Ross lately.
Yeah.
Because that was a major need, like, especially if you know you can't absolutely rely on Carroll at this point because of his health or whatever the case is. Who's that next guy? And for a while, it was like, there is no next consistent guy. And that's a huge problem. You're asking maybe like Norman Powell to outdo his abilities at this point in his career. But Ross could be an answer there.
And the Raptors put faith in him and expecting him that he will be the answer. I mean, they look at it and they go, like, he's 25. He's our guy down the road. And they took a lot of flack, you know, last year saying, well, is he worth this?
Which now
looks like a great contract.
Yeah. Seriously. turns out they know what they're doing.
Yeah. And, well, imagine that. But he's I think that's the thing that's going to be key for also with this team down the road is the development of Terrence Ross is one of those fundamental pieces for a team that needs to get past its current ceiling.
Especially one that struggles to shoot the three, you know, that's really something Ross brings to the table. He's had all these like steals that lead to fast break dunks the last couple games that are like absolute momentum changers. And he can have a really, really big impact. And I've liked how consistently his like effort, and I never like to question someone's effort because I don't want to get too deep into it, but I just feel like it's like something like none of us can ever comment on.
Right.
But he's consistently certainly has been linked to that. And I think this season you're just seeing him really focused, bringing it like each night. And I think it's a huge element of why the Raptors are in a pretty good position right now.
Yeah. And you talk about three pointers, Cleveland for this year. I mean, they're shooting like 40% from three. They're like just tearing the lights out. If the Raptors should get back to an Eastern Conference final against those Cleveland Cavaliers, you better believe the three-pointer is going to be a big part of that conversation. Jonas Valanciunas, he's had a strong week for the Raptors. There's always going to be questions about his usage with this team and in his minutes. You know, there was a time, when was it, 10 days ago or so, when he was basically Bebe Noguera got the fourth quarter minutes over Jonas Valanciunas, and I know he was, it was probably more to do with his knee injury than anything else. Again, the fans calling for Jonas to get more usage, and even still, he's around 30 minutes a night for this Raptor team. Dave, what is his ceiling? Have we seen his ceiling yet? We know he's hitting his mid-20s. Is this another guy like DeMar where we're just going to continue to see him get better and better each year until he gets to that 27 to 29 age range?
I mean, I think so. Like all the signs point to it. I mean, he's only 24 right now. He's gotten better every year. I think he's going to continue to do so. I don't think he's ever going to be like DeRozan in the sense that he's an absolute game changer,
right,
night in, night out. But what we've seen from this season is I think considerable improvement. He's moving better. You might see nights where a guy like Bebe sees the floor in crunch time over him, and I think that's just purely matchup based, and because of the way that Bebe can defend the basket in a way that JV just can't, which is fine. I mean, that's not his game. But like DeRozan, like Ross to a degree, like what I really like about what JV's doing is the assertiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's never been like shy for contact or intimidated by other players or anything like that. But he's really just like has this mindset like I'm going to go in and bully people around and make my presence known. And you can just see that in the way he's playing. You can see that in his body language. And the Raptors are better for it. I mean, and they're recognizing that. Like despite what fans might say, like he's never been used more. He's never played more minutes. He's never taken more shots per game. He's hitting 57% of his shots, making more than 80% of his free throws. Averaging double-digit rebounds, 14 points per game as a clear number three option.
Yeah.
Sometimes lower, depending on who's got the hot hand. I think you have to really like what you've seen from him this season. Just again, the assertiveness is what I really like.
If Carroll and JV are fully healthy, how does that Eastern Conference Final look any different? I mean, the Raptors still won two games. But if they are healthy, how much difference does that look? And it just goes to show, again, keeping these guys healthy through the course of the season and into the playoffs is that much more of an obstacle that the Raptors have to navigate through.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I tend to be from the camp of being super pessimistic in that if you don't have a guy like LeBron, you can't make the NBA playoffs. But we have a better DeMar. You have a team that's getting better all around. I mean, we went to six games right last year. I mean, it's not they're competitive with that team. It's close. And if JV can become, you know, and continue. I mean, on trajectory he's had this year, which has been great. But he can keep doing better, and both of them are healthy. I don't know.
Also, think about what JV was doing before he got hurt in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
He was just dominating games. Like, that was the best we've ever seen him.
I always forget about that, actually.
It's because it was pretty short-lived. Like, it really didn't last long. But I put that in that Cleveland series, and I still don't, I don't think the Raptors are where Cleveland's at. Cleveland is just a really good team, and yeah, like, LeBron is going to always be a problem. Too big of a problem to overcome, I would say.
You have to hope for one big injury on that team, and that's always the problem with the Raptors. Well, even if, I don't know, if Kyrie gets hurt, can that make enough of a difference that the Raptors maybe have more of a chance?
I would think no, but I mean, it would be a competitive series. It was already a pretty fairly competitive series. So throw in a fully healthy Carroll. JV is a real interesting question mark because they don't have anyone who can guard JV.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing Tristan Thompson at center for the most part, and him or Kevin Love, both those guys will just get tossed around by JV. So it does change things. It does make it interesting. And also, we saw against Indiana and a little bit against Miami, especially because Kyle and DeMar were struggling with their shots so much, where the Raptors did say, we are going to play through Valanciunas all game,
right.
and they won games like that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. We'll see. I also do think that Cleveland is the only threat in the East.
Yeah.
The only threat.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the Eastern Conference Final again.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. But that's,
I would be shocked if it wasn't.
It would be disappointing if it wasn't. I mean, that's great that Toronto is at that level where we're saying, look, it's Eastern Conference Finals, like, we're going to be disappointed when we don't win the Eastern Conference Finals. And then they will be disappointed. I mean, I think they're I don't think they will win the Eastern Conference Finals, but this shows how this team's been developed.
Well, and people always say, well, in that sense, then isn't the regular season just not that important? Well, what's important is getting a 2 or 3 seed, basically, because then you avoid Cleveland in the second round. So that's huge, is getting enough wins that you're at least in one of those two spots in the Eastern Conference. Dan Riccio, Dave Zarum, and Dan Robson. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. It is Grey Cup weekend, and today is the Vanier Cup. But Grey Cup weekend is, I don't know. I know CBC a couple of weeks ago were asking people on the street at where the Grey Cup was going to be played this year, and most people didn't know it was right here in our own very city. Is that just a sign of the times? Is the Grey Cup, are the Argos even really all that important to this city anymore? We'll talk about that next. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Dan Riccio, Dave Zarum, Dan Robson on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
With a taste of what's on Sportsnet.ca right now, here's Ryan Dixon.
Few players made a name for themselves in the NHL like Steve Yzerman, but all he achieved while wearing skates, according to longtime friend Colin Campbell, didn't mean a thing when it came time to start a new career as GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
They were hiring like Steve Jones, not Steve Yzerman. Like, if people think he got hired because of his name and what he did on the ice, they're wrong.
What Campbell means is, Yzerman proved himself worthy of the opportunity by learning the ropes as an understudy for a handful of years in the Detroit Red Wings front office. You certainly won't find many people who doubt Yzerman's abilities now, not with the Lightning evolving into a perennial contender for the Stanley Cup. And while the work ethic Yzerman displayed throughout his playing career has carried over to his new job, former teammate and current Toronto Maple Leafs executive Brendan Shanahan knows that alone won't allow you to build a winner.
When there was a subject that interested him, he made himself an expert in that subject. He'd go buy a book.
As those who've crossed paths with him know, elbow grease and intelligence have always been a big part of the Steve Yzerman story. And that means his time as a GM might yet become as decorated as the resume he put together while turning opponents inside out on the ice.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
The Raptor segment was last segment. That message for our operator, Viken Polatian.
Why? Because they're playing Drake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan
Just
want
to make sure I'm on the same page here.
Dave Zarum and Dan Robson. I thought that was like the thing to do. Just play a Drake song when you're about to.
No, I'm glad you didn't do that because that is getting quite played out.
Just a bit. Just
also
a bit.
The whole like having to play hip hop. Before we're talking about basketball.
The whole Drake That's knife thing with like Kevin Durant staring down Drake after the game was very
well,
strange.
Like, that's like wrestling. It's like,
yeah.
It's a fake beef.
I also never understood the Doris Burke thing. Not that there's anything wrong with Doris Burke. It just kind of it reached awkward levels at a certain point between Drake and Doris Burke. That would be an awkward dinner to be at as well. But Raptors talk was last segment. Let's get into what is going on in terms of big events here in this city, Toronto, over the next couple of days. We'll start with the Grey Cup and shift towards Toronto FC. They are somewhat tied as, you know, TFC and Argos fans like to battle each other now that they are sharing a home. And really, the Argos haven't made it all that much of a home. And the Grey Cup... certainly is having their own struggles selling the seats at BMO Field for tomorrow night. If you want, you can still try and buy some tickets, although I'm sure if you just hang around Liberty Village, somebody will give you a pair tomorrow. The way things went this week with basically people in Hamilton or Pizza in Hamilton giving away tickets with a large pizza and some wings, which was a deal that was later axed by the CFL after they pissed off their very hardcore fan base, which probably not the best thing for them to do. What is it? Is it just the CFL is not a thing here in Toronto anymore? It hasn't been for such a long time. You would think that something like the Grey Cup is, as we talk about often, Toronto is an event city. Is the Grey Cup not an event to the city of Toronto?
It's difficult to say. I mean, it's easy to say there's just so much going on in Toronto, and it's you know, it's such a busy
I saw
busy
it
city.
Written that it was big event fatigue given, you know,
right.
the World Juniors or whatever and the World Cup and all these things that have been happening here.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the Grey Cup is growing up, I remember the Grey Cup being a thing. Like, even if I didn't really understand it, I remember hearing about it and wanting to watch it. And it had this Canadiana kind of feel to it. But we've lost it somewhat. And that, certainly not elsewhere in Canada, just in this large, horrible city.
And I think that's a big point to make, is that, you know, I don't know the CFL's numbers nationwide. Obviously, in Toronto, it is very hard for them to generate interest. The Argos are seemingly like less important, less relevant, less present than I can ever remember. Part of it is, like, you know, a big city with a lot going on, so your attention gets divided. Part of it, I think, is younger generations and demographics, where the CFL fan, like you said, it's based on kind of tradition.
Right.
Whereas younger sports fans now have all these competing things to get into, and they're watching the Raptors, they're watching TFC, they're getting more into, you know. You got this young Leafs teams, they're always going to have their fan base. But there are other sports interests that are taking away from football. I think football in general is in trouble. You know, the NFL's like numbers are way down. And something like the CFL commissioner downplaying the
CTE.
Concussion. Yeah, the concussion connection
in
football.
Rough.
That doesn't make me want to go out and support your product at all. It makes me want to do the opposite. I want to run away and not be associated with you and that mindset. So I think there's just like a lot of factors that make something like the Grey Cup and the CFL in general less important here. But like you said, Robson, you go outside of the city, and I think there is still a place for the CFL in our like national sports landscape. I always think when we have these discussions about, you know, I lived in New Brunswick for 4 years, and they don't have a CFL team out there. Halifax doesn't have a CFL team. They did for, I think, one season. But the passion for football out there is unbelievable. Mm. And, you know, if they were able to sustain a team, they would have a really, really passionate fan base. Their knowledge for football is huge. They all grow up playing football. High school football is massive. CIS football is massive in a way that just never existed here for, I think, all the reasons I listed before. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the league going forward across the country. Certainly, in Toronto, they're in serious trouble.
I will say this. I've grown up in the city my whole life. And, you know, from when my formative years started to come about, the Argos were already number four. Because at that point, the Raptors were a bigger part of the scene. Vince Carter jumped on the scene. The Leafs and Jays were already there. And then you had 1, 2, 3, Leafs, Jays, Raptors. Argos were four. And for whatever reason, I grew up around friends that watched NFL more than we did CFL. So just the Argos were an afterthought. And now I think maybe I was that first generation, and now we're into a second generation of fans that are feeling that way. And even added to that, maybe they're seeing TFC as the fourth team in the city now more so than the Argos.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I know when I was younger as well, I remember there was that there was like the Our Balls Are Bigger campaign, and there was this notion of like we're competing with the NFL in some way. And that's just, I mean, it's just not true. I mean, I think the reality is within Toronto, we view the CFL as a minor league to the NFL. And we know that the players, frankly, view it the same way.
But I also like, and being a soccer fan and covering TFC the way I cover Major League Soccer, you know, that's, I'm never going to compare that to the English Premier League or something like that, but I still watch it because if I'm a fan of that sport, I'm still going to find ways to enjoy it.
I agree. I mean, but the MLS has worked to bring in marquee players and are trying to be, their goal, and not that it's going to work, is to sort of compete at the best level they can. But the reality is football is an American, North American sport. I mean, it has one giant market here and in North America. And I think that, you know, you're always going to look at the NFL and go, well, that's what's great. And when you're in Toronto, unfortunately, as it falls to sort of fifth on our idea of what's important to watch, whereas elsewhere there's more of almost like a college football mentality where, you know, these players might turn over, you might be hard to get to attach, but you're attached to that logo, you're attached to that team and that experience of sitting with your family in a cold stadium and enjoying that game. And that history still resonates in those places, which is incredible. But this cold-hearted city just seems to forget about that. I mean, the Argos are our oldest professional team. The history of the CFL is incredible.
Yeah.
But we just don't have the understanding or respect for it.
And the irony, too, is that Canadian football is really exciting. Like, three-down football is very fun to watch. Like, I'd say more so than four-down football. But yeah, there's just something kind of impeding us from getting back onto that Argos wagon the same way, like the Flutie pinball era. Like, it just seems like so far removed from that.
It's too hard, I think, for, like, is there a star that the Argos could even bring in at any point?
Well, that's
I have no idea.
That's like, interesting because, like,
you had Rocket Ishmael, you had Flutie, you had Ricky Williams even.
Yeah, you're getting, it feels at least like less marquee imports from, like, American colleges, people who come in with a name or come from the NFL, like failing in the NFL and then come to the CFL. But also, you know, we have the Vanier Cup on Sportsnet, and that should be a way to develop, to make those athletes, to find fans for those athletes
fairness,
so that you can follow them to the CFL. But that just, for some reason, we don't pay enough attention to that either. I mean,
well, yeah, and you know, like, what sells in the NFL? Talking quarterbacks, you know, the best quarterbacks on the best teams. Right. That's what sells. You can watch the Vanier Cup. You're never going to see a Canadian quarterback in the CFL.
Right, you're not. I mean, you can maybe trying to hang on to like a third role or in the practice squad. Like, it's not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not going to have. It's just different because the level of football coming out of the States is just it's incredible, and there's just not enough places for these great players, and it's. They're going to come and play here.
I do have a suggestion, and I'll tie it into Toronto FC, and it actually just popped into my head. But with Major League Soccer, one of the ways that they decided would be a good way to generate interest in the league is, okay, we have a salary cap. We know our teams need to adhere to a salary cap because they're not going to be generating enough dollars to survive if they just go and blow their brains out on whatever they want. So that's fine. But they also decided, okay, if we want to bring in players from Europe, we can have designated players, and they can get paid whatever the heck you want to pay them in your budget, and that way you can bring stars. Maybe that's something the CFL can work into, where they can bring in a guy. I don't know, because it's still too hard to see anybody leaving the NFL for the CFL.
Well, the other thing is that when it comes to football, your shelf life as an athlete is so much shorter, right? Like, you can get an aging, like a, who is it? Riccio, I apologize if I'm wrong here. Drogba?
Yeah, Didier Drogba.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, Drogba, a guy like him, like, if this was football, his career would be over by the time he would have come over to Montreal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Over at the highest of levels, yes.
Yeah, like, in terms of being, like, a guy worth paying money to see.
Right.
Outside of just being able to see, I saw this guy.
But now they're getting younger. I mean, they brought in Javenko. Who's,
yeah, that's like, an exception.
And they're paying him $7 million a year, something he wouldn't even get in Europe.
Right.
And it's paying off because it's bringing fans and winning football.
Exactly. And, like, you know, maybe you can pay... You know, because backup quarterbacks in the NFL still make a pretty penny, and to the point where you're not going to bring them to the CFL, but if you can bring them here or something like that, just to generate some sort of interest, because I look at it and I'm like, what kind of star can put the Argos back on the map? I don't see one.
Well, that was a rumor for a long time,
well,
wasn't it?
Well, I think it was for elsewhere, but just get him out of baseball and bring someone that's that like, media magnet here.
It's interesting, so what I'm hearing, and I tend to agree with this, and I think it's why people are watching NFL football less and less, is that really the answer is star power.
Yeah.
And like those recognizable names, those people who you want to buy their jersey, whatever the case is. And that's a really hard thing to just develop. Like that, I think that has to almost happen organically. And a lot of like luck and timing and factors like that come into play. And it's hard to just find stars. And I don't know where you get them from. I think you can get them from Canadian college football, but you have to train fans to follow that closely. And it's just, I don't know if they have the time or the interest.
But and I think, Daniel, you could probably speak to this better than I can, but do the TFC fan base, I mean, is it simply grown because stars are coming here? Or was it, they've had a passionate fan base since day one.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think it's just because people, like, we know there's a soccer fan base in this city.
Huge international city.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, some of them decided, you know what, MLS isn't for me. It's not good enough. I'm going to continue watching English Premier League or Champions League or whatever. And another segment was like, okay, well, this is what we have. Let's try and build it here. This is our local team. And we're going to support it to the death. And that's where you had the spawning of all the different supporter groups. And now you're starting to see younger Canadian players come up through the system and make big contributions on these MLS teams. You know, I know there isn't a whole lot in the starting 11s of either Montreal or Toronto in this Eastern Conference final, but you do have Jonathan Osorio and things like that. So, you know, it's helping in that sense. And as we shift this conversation to Major League Soccer, maybe, you know, that is, I think, what we're seeing here is you're getting 100,000 people in these two games with Montreal and Toronto, and it's got more of a Canadian feel and a soccer fan base that's just growing in this city.
Well, I think, and to Dave's point a second ago about the reality of this multicultural city that we live in, I mean, basketball and soccer are growing sports that are incredibly popular and accessible across the planet. I mean, this is something, both these sports are highly popular, where again is football is sort of, I mean, it's like if you go to Australia, there's Aussie rules football, and this is our little world. And I think that the reality is that these sports are better set up to be more popular in the long run, and they're better set up to have capture the attention of the young fan base, especially in the city, in the GTA. And we're seeing that play out. We're seeing that with how passionate fans are for the Raptors and how passionate they are for TFC. Both of those fan bases, I argue, are by far the best fan bases in Toronto. They're just diehard fans, and it's incredible to see.
Yeah, I mean, just being in Montreal the other day, and you know, like, there was certain segments of Montreal where TFC fans kind of took over the city. They took over certain streets. They took over the subway system. They were there in numbers, more than 2,000 of them in Montreal, and basically showing and supporting their Reds.
And we should say, Jays fans did that this year, have done it since they've been winning. They did it out in Seattle. Was a beautiful moment. I mean, it was just almost emotional seeing how many Jays fans were there. But obviously, because it's a national thing. But at the same time, it wasn't always like that. Whereas TFC's had some rough years, and the fans have stuck through it, and they deserve a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, they deserve it. They deserve this run. And you know, the way that first game went, and they go down 3-0, and it's just like, oh, here we go again, TFC.
That was rough.
Here comes the funeral. And you know, they come back and they make a game of it, and now they have everything to play for on Wednesday night. And you know, this is kind of the thing that I hear with Argo fans all the time, and I've argued with them on Twitter, like, it's a cold night, and this and that, and they find every excuse in the book, like, we didn't even know the game was on tonight. Like, well, how big of a fan are you if you didn't know that this game was happening tonight?
It's gonna be cold on Wednesday too.
Yeah, it's gonna be cold, and they sold out 36,000, like in the snap of a finger. So tell me, which fan base is more stable right now in this city, and how is it even an argument?
I mean, at the moment, I don't think it's an argument at all. I think it's just, this is just this reality. Trying to understand why the Argos aren't appealing the same way is, I think, the interesting question. But I think the debate in terms of which fan base is stronger, it's over.
But and it's also about more than just winning, because you think about that Argos Grey Cup win. When was that? 2013, 2012?
Yeah.
That didn't seem to generate a ton of buzz. Needless to say, like, it was cool, but I mean, it didn't have the same like city rallying around a team.
I think if the Argos are in the game, you sell out BMO without much trouble. Maybe if they don't overprice the market like they did as well. But at the same time, it's still, that's the only way they're generating any interest. And then start of next season, that interest is all gone.
And how much were we sold on the fact that moving to BMO was going to solve problems, you know, and it just
I was a little bit sold on it. I love the
idea. It's a really cool stadium. It's a cool place to watch football.
A part of me really wanted to go to a game this year, and I didn't go to a game this year, but part of me thought, you know, that would be fun. Like, that it intrigued me for a brief moment, and then life just got busy and I didn't go. But that, I think
there was a half second of buzz after the home opener and the tailgating, and even that, I mean, it's just so hard at Toronto, because even if you are charging $4 or $5 for a beer to tailgate, you're still charging more than I'm just allowed to bring it and do whatever I want. You know, it's just that mindset.
If you're winning, maybe there's a different reality to it. Then I don't know, but maybe
I think there's a bigger thing here. Again, maybe I think it's more about football than it is about the Argos. Sure. You know, because we're seeing it in the NFL too. We're certainly seeing it in other markets in the CFL. Not every market. But I think it's a football problem. You know, I think especially the way a lot of the associations we have with, again, this might be more about the NFL, but a lot of the negative things that come out of that, the concussion problems, the domestic abuse that we hear reported about, all that kind of stuff, it just makes people, it's just turning people off of football. So I do think that's part of it. The star power thing, I think, is the biggest issue, though.
Yeah, and maybe some of those Stampeders should be stars. Bo Levi Mitchell certainly having a fantastic season with the Stampeders, but it just it goes unnoticed, at least in this city, unfortunately. Calgary and Ottawa play tomorrow night, TFC Montreal there on Wednesday. You guys, thanks very much for this today.
No, this is cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll do it again soon sometime. Dan Racho filling in for Ben Ennis. Thanks to Dan Robson and Dave Zarum. This was Sportsnet Magazine Live.